When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, this week on Performance Anxiety, we have Nick Vivid. I'm your host, Mark, and before we get into the podcast, let me tell you a little bit about Nick. He's a character, and he proceeded to crack me up as soon as he got on. He grew up with two turntables and a microphone in his living room because his dad was a radio disc jockey. But as Nick will tell us, that doesn't always make for the best situation for an up-and-coming musician. He started off writing songs based on hymns from church when he was a little kid. But soon enough, he started playing in rock bands. After some bands, opening a studio, which was ruined in a flood, and an injury that had him bedridden for 3 months, Nick decided to start all over. Music may be a different style, but Nick is still the energetic frontman. In fact, he's the only man. He has a new album out called No More Secrets. He talks about losing his dad while making the album and using the process as a way to heal. And one of the most popular songs on the album was created in a bout of frustration while developing that song. To pick up No More Secrets on Bandcamp, follow Nick on all the social media platforms. I think there's only one Nick Vivid. And check out his Twitch channel. And follow us at Performance ANX on social media. Check out the show on Pantheon Podcast Network. And you can help support us at ko-fi.com/performanceanxiety or through performanceanx.threadless.com by buying some merch. And let's go there with Nick Vivid on Performance Anxiety, part of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
This is Nick Vivid, and This is Nick Vivid. Check out my new album. I just forgot the name of my album. No More Secrets. All right, here we go. Hi, this is Nick Vivid. Check out my new album, No More Secrets, nickvivid.com. You are listening to the Performance Anxiety Podcast. Let me do one more. I'd like to do one. Let me get that right. Hey, this is Nick Vivid. Check out my new album, No More Secrets. You are listening to the Performance Anxiety Podcast.
Oh, am I sideways to you?
Yeah, but I can deal with it.
Okay, I think I may have to deal with it too.
Unless this goes on YouTube or something.
No, it's just audio only. This is ridiculous. There we go. Awesome, man. Well, thank you for joining me tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
I have been listening to the new album, and man, I don't even know how to describe it to some. I'm glad I end up using clips in the show because I don't really even know how to describe it. It's just, it's really cool. It's like,
neither does my publicist. that's a couple of you. That problem.
Well, it's awesome. I mean, it's like DIY meets like synthwave done by the Bee Gees.
Yeah. With a little soul and funk added in, and maybe some 70s rock, and it's a whole bunch of stuff.
There's too much to put into one blurb about it. It's really impressive how many different areas you touch on.
Thank you. They're all things I like, you know. It's like I listen to music. If there's something about it that I like, it goes in the mental file cabinet.
Yeah.
And then somehow it you know, comes back out as this other thing that's mixed in with all these other things that ended up on other, you know, decks of the file cabinet and other folders. And then it's if somebody took out the file cabinet, threw the folders everywhere and all the papers went everywhere.
And you just kind of shuffle it all together.
Oh, mom's home, you know, or something, you know, throw them all back in.
And whatever comes out the next time.
Yeah, that's what happens. That's how my songs get written, apparently. So.
I love it. It's such a great method. But I want to find out a little bit about how you got to this point, before we start talking about the album that's out. So you're from Buffalo, right?
Originally, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I spent 3 or 4 years up in Rochester, so I know how freaking cold it gets up there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good God, I don't miss that place.
I don't either. I don't know.
You have kind of music in your DNA. I mean, your dad was a disc jockey up there,
mm-hmm.
and your mom was a big music fan. I'm assuming there was just a lot of music in the house.
Yeah, there was. And out of the, one of the few things that was encouraged in the house was music, you know, because it was a very music friendly house for sure. There was just always music playing. We had two turntables and a microphone in the living room, literally like a DJ set up with a mixer and everything. And that was like part of the normal living room setup. And so when I was a little kid and I was like 5 or 6 years old, and I'd be sitting there spinning records, you know, going from record A to record B and back. I didn't do scratching or anything like that. Right. You know, I didn't know any really methods, you know, but I was cue up a song, you know, and stuff like that. So I was always kind of like really into the process of music and the mechanics behind music and the production aspect of at least producing on air at that point and kind of being hands-on with it, you know, and being part of it as opposed to just passively listening.
That was always
kind of a thing growing up.
That is awesome. I don't know anybody else who grew up with an A and B set of turntables. I mean, I guess that's the benefit of having a DJ for your dad.
Yeah, yeah. He was always into that. So that kind of, even after he retired from the DJ business, he kept that with him.
So what were your influences growing up? What were you, besides what your dad was playing on the radio and what your mom loved, what were you into?
Well, I was into hard rock. Kiss was my favorite band when I was a little kid, because I just saw the makeup and the costumes and I said, oh my God, what is that?
Yeah.
So I just got really into like theatrics and presentation and stage show. And I liked anything that had like good, you know, just made me feel good about myself. You know, when I was a kid, I was picked on a lot and I was kind of nerdy and kind of introverted. And I gravitated towards music that was weird and different and seemed confident in that weirdness. It seemed confident in being strange. It told me there was nothing wrong with me. Like music that told me that I was okay, you know, and those are the kind of the bands that made me feel like that were the bands I was gravitating to. So a lot of hard rock just made you feel very like, you know, masculine and very like, you know, kind of, we're going to do this. And then everything else I listened to was just kind of, you know, emphasizing feeling okay about myself and feeling good. So I tended to gravitate towards anything that was like that. Plus, you know, I was raised on MTV.
Yeah.
Back when they, you know, were primarily doing music, you know, and it was, and they were, and I mean, they were at one point, they were a major cultural, force, you know, like they drove the culture. And so I was, you know, paying a lot of attention to MTV in the early 90s when the whole Seattle thing was huge. That was a big influence on me. And the stuff from the 80s was a big influence on me. And listening to rock records from the 70s was a big influence on me. Seeing bands on stages with lights. Oh, you know, big stages with big lights hanging over ahead of them. And they just looked, you know, godly, you know, standing on that stage with the hair, you know, like the outer edges of their hair would be glistening with like purples and reds, you know, and they'd be silhouetted and stuff. And I was and the great thing about it is like, I've done all that stuff now. Like I've been in all the situations. I like know how that's all done now. But at the time it was so magical. And now I'm like, I've done all that in a weird way. Like I think one of the things that is so much fun about what I'm doing is that I'm getting to be the type of artist I never thought I could be.
Oh,
you know?
Really?
Like I didn't think I had this in me. I thought I was going to be a weirdo, introverted, weird kid for the rest of my life. And then I like can put a flowery shirt on and jump around on stage and raise my hand in the air and people go, yeah, okay, we'll buy that. I'm like, really? Okay. You know? So.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, Being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is, therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with the stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Try doing that in person. So join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And a special offer to Performance Anxiety listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. That's betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast.
So once I realized I could, an audience would like actually pay attention to this and see it as legitimate, you know, that's kind of how I got to this point to some degree.
So when did you start playing instruments? How old were you when playing music became more of a drive than just listening?
I started writing like from the moment I knew how songs, you know, existed. I didn't know.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I was writing songs. My mom would make me go to church every Sunday and I would be so bored that I'd be sitting there with nothing, you know, nothing to do. Literally have a whole church service to pay attention to.
Right.
But in my mind, I have nothing to do. I'm bored out of my mind. So I'm going through the church hymnals and I'm reading the lyrics to all these church songs. And I don't know what they sound like. I can't read music, but yeah. I can read the lyrics and I can see that there's phrasing. And I can see that they're sectioned off into choruses and verses. And I understand that much. And so in my mind, I'm making up new songs these songs and I'm singing them to myself. And then I'm constructing records. I'm like, okay, well, this song's 3 minutes and 30 seconds. And I'm thinking in terms of albums where you could fit like 22 and a half minutes on a side of an album. So now I'm producing an album in church sitting in a pew. And I'm like thinking, okay, well, this song's going to be 3 minutes. This is going to have a guitar solo. This one's going to not have a guitar solo. This one's going to, you know, this is going to, oh, this, you know, this one should end side two because it's a nice slower song. It fades out really nicely. And I'm like constructing, you know, I'm like 10 years old doing this.
Oh my God.
I don't know how to play an instrument, but this is where my mind, you know, this is my imagination. This is how I chose to use my imagination when I was a kid.
Oh,
and so I would be, you know, and I still do that to this day. I mean, that's just always something I've done. So
when did you start playing what instruments and what was the first instrument you picked up?
Well, drums I started playing. I guess it would be around that time I'd started playing drums because I was like 11 when I got my first drum kit. And I was like, there's actually a video put out for the song Hush Money, which is like a lyric video. And it's got old footage of me when I was a little kid. I was like maybe 6 or 7 playing a little Muppet kit in the backyard. So, you know, I didn't really know how to play. I'd say I was like 11 when I like kind of started understanding how to play the drums. And 13, 14, I wanted to learn how to play guitar because I wanted to start writing songs. And I realized I didn't want to be on the back of the stage.
Yeah.
I wanted to be in the front of the stage. And I wanted to learn, you know, I actually wanted to learn how to play some of these songs I heard in my head. So, you know, I learned enough to, and then, you know, I played rhythm guitar for like a year and then I learned how to guitar solo. I didn't think I'd ever be able to play a guitar solo. And then I was like, oh, I can actually solo. And you know, it just kind of grew out of that. And then I got a 4-track. I'd make records, you know, really bad records, but I was making records. I was putting all those techniques that I had imagined in my head to use and learning how to actually craft records and put things together. And they weren't very good, but it was the idea that I was doing it.
Were you singing this whole time?
I was singing a little bit, but I didn't develop a style or my voice at all. I wasn't very confident. It really wasn't, you know, until I came to New York that I really found my voice as a rock singer. And I was pretty good at that. And then when I started doing this kind of music, it, you know, I always had a falsetto because I always sang in like high school chorus and stuff. But yeah. The falsetto finally like started paying dividends when I started doing this kind of music. So now people know me as that, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. So how old were you when you started getting together and playing in bands? And I guess, were you gigging locally in Buffalo?
Yeah, I was in my early 20s and then moved to New York. After I was in a band called Bisapiens, and they were kind of a glam rock thing, and we had some industry attention, and I decided the band wasn't serious enough.
Okay.
And I quit one day, and then I moved to New York and I started from scratch. And then I put a band together in New York called Drag Citizen.
Yes.
Which was pretty badass band.
They're freaking awesome, dude.
You know that band?
I know. I saw some videos on YouTube. There's like a 6-song concert up on YouTube.
Are you sure we're talking about my band, Drag Citizen?
It says right here. I will pull up right now because it says thanks you in the notes there. Let me see.
Oh, really?
Live at the Continental Club, February 17th, 2006.
Second era of Drag Citizen. Okay. There was an original incarnation in 2004, and then 2006 was the second incarnation.
Okay.
And then that band broke up. Then I joined another band called The Nuclears. Then I quit that band, and then I had a recording studio, and then that wasn't fun, and that ended. And then I was like, you know what? I'm tired of being in bands, but I love performing. And then I started this about 5-6 years ago. And
okay. Then,
yeah. This kind of came out of a thing where I had this recording studio and I lost it to a flood, and I really didn't enjoy it anyway. I thought maybe, you know, after being in bands for years and things not working out, they always seem to break up, or things don't, you know, there's always like egos that get weird, or something happens. And I was saying to myself, maybe this isn't what I should be doing with my life, you know? And so I built a recording studio hoping to help other bands, thinking maybe that would give me a sense of feeling. At the end of the day, it's about feeling fulfillment.
Yeah.
And I wanted to feel fulfilled in my art and my creative endeavors. And so I built this recording studio thinking if I serve others, maybe this will help me. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being completely the opposite. I ended up helping out half the bands I worked with. I really enjoyed working with, but the other half like didn't appreciate it at all. We're kind of, it just wasn't fun.
And I
wasn't getting any fulfillment creatively or artistically or anything out of it. I said, you know what? I enjoy recording, but I don't enjoy recording anybody but myself. Okay. And that's okay. It took me a long time to realize that was okay. That wasn't my ego talking. Like, that wasn't me saying, being selfish or arrogant about my talents. That was me just saying, you know what? I really just enjoy doing this for myself, and that's okay. I lost the studio. I injured myself carrying things out of the studio due to all the stress involved with that. I got stuck in bed for 3 months with a strained core.
Oh my gosh.
I literally really strained my entire core from my chest down to my knees.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I was like, I couldn't stand up without putting weight on my chest muscles.
Oh my God.
It was really weird, really freaky.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, it was bad. And so I was literally stuck in bed for 3 months. I said, what am I doing with my life?
Oh my God.
I was like, you know what? I want to make music. I want to keep going with this, but I don't want to be in any bands anymore. I see all these hip hop guys. They're playing to backing tracks. They're playing to stadiums with backing tracks. Why can't I do something like that? I've played rock and roll for years, but am I playing rock and roll because that's what I love, or am I doing it because I think that's the only thing I'm allowed to do anymore? And I realized I wanted to reinvent myself. So I did it with this kind of music, and it's been a blast ever since. This is my fourth record. I probably had more success doing this than anything else I've ever done, you know, just because I'm able to get to the fourth record.
Yeah.
Every band I've been in, we do an album and we break up. And it was just that over and over and over and over again. And I just got tired of that. And now I'm actually able to see something through to where I think it can go.
And you're playing music that you want to play, doing it yourself, making sure it sounds exactly the way you want it to sound.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm loving it. I'm having a blast with it. So it's great.
Good things happen when
Sorry for that really long answer.
No, that's what this whole podcast is about, man. I love long answers. Less I have
all
to
right,
talk.
Cool.
The audience likes it too. Cause they don't want to hear me.
Fair enough.
So you actually started working with Kiss's original manager though, right? Was it Bill Alcoin?
Yeah.
How did you meet up with him?
I was a big Kiss fan, as I said earlier, and I was doing these, when I was in high school, I was selling bootleg Kiss concerts. and I met Bill at a Kiss convention, actually, and I gave him my CD and he sent me a nice rejection letter because he didn't like the music I was making. And then I put that band together and we ended up being at this thing in Philly that he was at, this music conference in Philly, and he fell in love with the band. And then when the band kind of fell apart, he's the one who encouraged me to move to New York.
Okay.
So, and then, you know, he helped out for a few years, but, you know, it was like all sorts of things. He helped me so much in my early formative getting to New York thing.
Yeah.
But the music industry was changing. His ability to kind of help me past a certain point wasn't really there. And without me putting my own band together and getting myself out there and doing it myself, he couldn't really do anything else for me. So that, you know, but we stayed in touch pretty much up until he died.
Yeah.
Which was like 10 years ago, I think now.
Something.
And, you know, he was a huge influence on me though. I would have never moved to New York had it not been for him.
Wow.
And I wouldn't be Nick Vivid if it weren't for him, really. He is really the inspiration to help me see things in myself that I didn't know, you know, I could do. And he was somebody who'd been there and done that and told me I could do it. And that's really what I needed to hear at the time.
So your first album came out in 2016, right?
So yeah, Watch It Fly.
Yeah, yeah, I was listening to that. That is really good, man.
Thank you.
For a first solo album, that Too Much Light is great. I got to tell you, I love Roberta.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah. I like Roberta too.
That song is awesome. And I've listened to the new album first. I kind of looped back around.
Okay.
And what I love is the sense of humor in your music.
Yeah, Roberta's like just about a crazy lady who thinks people are but I'm a big fan of like these prank call podcasts.
Oh yeah.
So sometimes at night when I'm trying to go to sleep, I'll listen to these guys, like just make prank phone calls fall asleep to that.
Oh God.
I don't know why.
That does weird stuff to your brain, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it does to my brain, but anyway, so it's just like a thing about like a woman who thought she was getting prank called all the time. So, that album was a real joy to do because, you know, being such a rock purist for years before that, I didn't allow myself to learn any recording techniques that existed past 1982. I didn't allow myself to learn sampling or understand the concept of sampling or beats or product, you know, working with triggers or any kind of MIDI or anything. Like I learned all that stuff like that, you know, at that time. So it was like a brand new world to me in 2016. I'm like catching up on like 30 years worth of recording technology.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, cool. This is awesome. Oh my God, you can do this. And then I'd listen to these hip hop guys from the 90s. I'm like, oh, that's what they were doing. Oh, I know how to do that.
Man.
And then I could figure all that out. And so that album was just kind of me just kind of throwing everything I possibly could against the wall and seeing what stuck and what I liked, you know, and then as the records went on, I kind of refined it, and each record's got its kind of own theme and space.
Yeah.
Yeah, that album's fun because it's just unadulterated kind of, it's got that youthful innocence of a band's first album about it that kind of has that kind of charm to it, you know, which I like.
There's one album there that you did that just kind of cracked me up, to be honest with you, because it took a second, but Electrowave's Radio Broadcast.
Oh, okay.
You just Rickrolled everybody on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, I did. Song titles.
Yeah, I love it. That is awesome.
So, these guys in Italy just asked me if I could. They were doing like this dance electronic house music podcast, and I'm like, I don't really do house music, but I got some things that sound kind of housey. And
yeah.
Let me see if I enjoy doing this, you know. So I put that together in like 2 weeks. It was just all like leftovers from Watch It Fly, and then I just finished them up, and then put that out. So yeah, that was just kind of a fun thing to do, you know, it's something different. I don't think I'd ever do it again, but it was fun at the time.
It's awesome. And the fact that the titles all spell out,
Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah, so yeah. Great. I love it. That's probably one of my favorite things I've seen on this podcast is almost 250 episodes in, and I've never seen anybody put that much thought into Rickrolling their audience.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Thank you. I didn't know what to call the songs, to be honest. I couldn't figure out like what would title these, because they're just all these instrumental tracks. I'm like, I don't have titles for any of these. And I just thought of that one day. I don't even know where that came from. And I was like, you know, that kind of works, you know, I'll just take all the, you know, all the... Morse code words.
The military alphabet, whatever.
The military alphabet, you know, and throw it all in there, make it all, and it all seemed to work.
God, I think that is brilliant. I love it.
Thank you.
But I also like Nixploitation. There's some cool stuff going on there. Like Belly Rub. I love it. But Empire State of Mind Part 4 is... That's one of my favorite songs of yours ever. Shoved off a rooftop in Brooklyn. Or maybe slashed on the train. Choked out proper by the boys in blue. If you say Lucy's, we'll bring the pain. Welcome to New York.
Thank you.
I love that. What happened to parts 1 through 3?
Well, obviously Jay-Z did parts 1.
Oh, did he? I don't listen to Jay-Z.
You know, the song, the Welcome New York, the New York Jay-Z song.
Oh, okay.
That's Empire State of Mind. And then there's somebody did a part 2, and it looked like maybe there was a part 3 out there, but I couldn't tell. So I was like, you know, just to be on the safe side, I'll make mine part 4.
That's just such a cool song.
Yeah, just to be on the safe side.
Your song, you do whatever you want with it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Slicey. Yeah. That is just a cool beat, cool sound. And you're doing all this on your own?
Mm-hmm.
Are you? Now, is this all electronic, or you playing like bass, or is it all?
Slicey, I played real bass on.
Okay.
I want to say it was a Moog maybe on that. I can't remember I did on that to make that sound, but it was badass when I heard it. And I was like, oh, that synth sounds awesome. Literally just drums, a synth, and a bass. And that's the whole song. And it just sounds so big.
It does.
You know, because it just slams. So Yeah, that was a lot of fun to make that one. And the bass was just like, yeah, I just literally like have a Fender jazz bass that I cranked out the notes on. So
we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
That, and going back to the sense of humor, One Way Mirror made me just laugh. Mm-hmm. I love your lyrics. They're just,
it's kind of a Me Too song. I gotta be careful. Yeah. Like, I was doing that live in the last tour. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this song anymore. People might take this the wrong way.
Oh man, people too serious as it is. Yeah. So you didn't start off playing these songs live though. The first couple albums, am I right? You were just releasing albums.
Right. I was just, because I didn't think I had enough material that would work in a live environment until I did Blissed Out. And then I thought, well, maybe I got enough live material now. And so I put a show together and for that record. And I wasn't sure what to expect. I did like MIDI controlled lights and a video screen and MIDI controlled vocal effects. And so the whole show was like just on a laptop and you just hit the button. It's almost like I got the whole show, synchronized and ready to go,
man.
And I hadn't performed in years, maybe like 6 or 7 years. And so like, and then I booked this big release party at this club in New York and I'm like, okay, let's see how this goes. And it actually went so well that I was like, okay, we're booking a tour. That's it. We're going on tour. So that's when I did my first big US tour for this stuff, which is, again, something I couldn't do for years because I was always in bands that kept breaking up or didn't want a tour or whatever, Yeah. So finally I was able to do a proper tour and it's great, And then after that tour, then I came back and thought I was going to put out another record in 6 months and then and go back out again. Then the pandemic happened. Duh. And here we are.
Yeah, talking to me on a podcast. Yeah. So was there any nerves trying to put a whole show together as a basically just a one man band?
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I didn't know if I was like, well, I'll try it. We'll see if it works. And if it doesn't, then I don't ever do it again.
Okay.
And if it does, then I'm going on the road with it. So I, had like maybe 80 to 100 people came to the release party.
Wow.
And it was a really good crowd. Everybody was really into it. They were really supportive. They seemed to really enjoy themselves. Apparently I was that was my thing. It was like, can I put on a show that's as entertaining as four guys on the stage together? Cause it's like, if somebody's going to a concert, they're going to see like three or four guys on the stage together. And can I make something as one person that's just as entertaining that somebody would want to spend a half hour, 40 minutes looking at?
Yeah.
And that was my goal. And it seemed to work pretty well. So, the show's structured, it's got ebbs and flows. It's got light and shade and all those little spots where like, all right, this is the song where this happens. This is the song where this happens. There's a real construct to the energy of it. And, and I also thought, having such a static show every night might make it boring for me, but actually it gave me a chance to like, oh, how can I do this better tomorrow? How can I make this better? So every day I was like, when we were doing the tour, I was actually constantly tweaking things in my own performance that made it better every night.
Oh,
and by the end of the tour, I felt like I was really nailing it. And then I put a new show together for the new record and just did a release party for that one. That went really well. And now I'm just kind of waiting to see when I can tour again. So,
yeah,
that's the big thing.
Did deciding to play some of this live change how you wrote music from Blissed Out on?
No, just because I know now that I've got enough live material for a set. And if I throw in one or two songs from the new record, that'll be fine.
Okay.
Like I can just keep making records now and I don't have to worry about that so much. So, which I didn't even really worry about it before. I just kind of waited until I had enough material to make it work.
Okay. So is it difficult to take a song where maybe you're actually playing instruments like the bass and get it so where you can actually do everything just by yourself? Or is it just a lot of sampling into the...
Well, it's literally the whole live is just me dancing with a microphone and the whole, everything's on backing tracks. So,
okay.
Even some of the, background vocals are on backing tracks.
Ah,
so live, I'm not playing any instruments. I'm just dancing like a fool with a microphone, fronting it like I got a band behind me.
The new album, No More Secrets, was that started in the pandemic or did it start before?
Just before. It was the plan. Like, I literally, after the tour, we got a new apartment in Queens and I built a recording studio in the living room and I said, okay, I'm going to make a record here and then we'll go back out on tour.
Yeah.
And then I started making the record and like a month later, the pandemic hit. So it was like February of 2020 when I started making, or started like, wow, you know, intentionally recording to try to figure out, you know, try to make another record. So,
oh my God. Did it have an effect on the songs you were writing?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, totally. Because the biggest thing was I was planning on morning, noon and night working on a record until I had something done, which was going to, no matter what, it was going to be done in like the next 3 months. You know, that was the idea.
Okay.
And just to be on the time crunch of getting back on the road in September, I was like, okay, finish the album in June, have it out by September. And then the pandemic hit and I was like, well, now I got all the time in the world. I might as well just sit here. And so the whole opposite approach, where I tend to give myself tough deadlines so that I can stay on top of things and make sure that they get done. But yeah, that record kind of forced me to take an approach I normally don't, which is let things happen at their own pace. And I think that benefited the record in a lot of ways, because I was able to take songs that were good and I think make them much better, if not great. I was able to help see things through a lot further than I did before, which was kind of neat. So,
yeah, I can definitely hear it. Feels like this album, there's a little, I didn't even really know how to describe it. This is my favorite album of your solo work.
Okay, thank you.
It definitely seems, it feels like a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, well, I for me, Blissed Out was my first album that really felt like me.
Okay.
And then that one felt like me, like figuring it out and going, okay, here's my voice, you know? Kind of me just kind of going, yeah, I don't know what to tell you, man. Here it is. This is it. You know, no more secrets. I don't care anymore. You know, it was just kind of like, I got no reason to be pretentious about anything. So I might as well just kind of tell you where I'm at.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what I think is going to make the album stand out from the rest of my catalog, is it's kind of just a heart on the sleeve kind of thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, with this, you lost your parents not too long ago before doing this, right?
Both my parents died after Blissed Out. My mom died like a month after Blissed Out came out. And then my dad died right as I was starting to mix No More Secrets.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right. But my dad and I weren't talking since my mom died. So we were kind of estranged anyway.
Oh.
So it was kind of like, so there's a lot of songs about my weird relationship with him on the record. And then after he died, I had to mix these songs. Yeah. And so that was a little weird.
Yeah.
The energy was really strange around the whole thing, you know, and then throwing the pandemic on top of it. And there was just like a lot of like weird energy on the record in terms of like bearing my soul in a way that it was just like, yeah, it was just really odd. But I'm glad I made it. And I'm glad I don't need to make that record now, you know, cause I did it, you know? So that's the cool thing about, that's the great thing about art is you get the opportunity to bare your soul and to share your truth with people. And once you get to do that, you don't have to do that anymore. Now you can share other things with people.
That's
and
true.
So I kind of released all that family stuff from childhood. It all came back, you know, with everything. And so like, that was the time for healing all that, you know, this record was really a way for me And the pandemic just gave me all this opportunity to sit with myself and look at my life again, you know? And so I put all that into the record. And now I'm like, okay, cool. I made that record. I'm glad I made it. And that's that story. You know?
So what did your parents think about you wanting to become a musician? Your dad was on the DJ side of things, playing people's records. Did they encourage you or discourage you? Indifferent?
My mom was totally encouraging. She loved it. She'd always come to my gigs. And
awesome.
My dad was more of a financially supportive. Oh, he wants to play music. Okay, I'll let him, you know? And he wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't, I don't know if he ever really listened to any of my music other than to critique it from a DJ's point of view. There was a time when I worked really hard on this one record when I was a teenager. And yeah, maybe it wasn't very good, but instead of him going, oh, wow, I'm really proud of you, son, he just said, listen, no radio station is going to want to play this album because of this, this, and this.
Oh,
and
I was like, what?
You know, I'm like 16, you know, my own father's just telling me I'm never going to make it making music though, like that. And I'm like, God. That's not really what you want to hear from your parents. So that kind of stuff, you know, is kind of hard, you know?
Oh my God.
Listen, I listened to your record and I've got a few critiques for you. No radio station is going to listen to this shit.
God.
Nobody's going to play it. fuck you, dude. Who wants to hear that?
Yeah, well, you give your dad a piece of art that you worked on. The last thing you want to do is I've got a few critiques for you. That's the last, that's the last thing you're expecting.
Yeah, that was not what I expected at all in those. So so because of those types of experiences with him, you know, and it's typical for a lot of kids who have that kind of relationship with their parents, they tend to withdraw from them and just not share with them what they're doing. So
that's very true.
So I really just kind of stopped playing my music for him. And but my mom was always there, you know, my mom was always into it and she loved it and she encouraged it. So, yeah, but that was kind of how it was with them. So, and my dad, you know, being into the soul and funk stuff that he was into, he played it around the house, but I didn't appreciate it till much later because I associated it with him. And so I kind of dismissive about it when I was younger, but as I got older, I tended to appreciate it. I go, oh, I remember that. Cause my dad used to play that. And I remember that, you know, that kind of thing. So those things ended up becoming an influence on me, but only in kind of in spite of him, not because of him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I have a few favorites. I mean, I love the album as a whole. I think it's great. But I do have a couple favorites on. I love Trainers. I think that's a great song.
Thank you.
I Want to Rain Again, which definitely sounds like you're kind of tired of the pandemic.
Yeah.
I think my favorite, though, is The Sky Is Falling.
Like that song.
Oh, the wah on that, and then the beautiful vocals on it. That's my favorite song of everything I've heard of from you.
You know, it's so weird because I just assumed that song would be the one that people would least likely get into.
Really?
And yet it seems to and it was the last one that came together for the record. I started a song called The Sky Is Falling four times. And every one of them, I just couldn't get anywhere with. And one day I just got really frustrated and I took elements of all of three of the different versions and just put them all together. And those are the three different sections of the song are like three different Sky Is Falling songs with the same vocal over top.
Oh, wow.
And it just kind of became this thing that I finally just in kind of this kind of frustration got together. I said, oh, this is really cool and this is really different, but it didn't seem commercial enough. Like everything else felt really commercial to me.
Yeah.
That song didn't feel very commercial. And I was like, well, it's more of like a deep track kind of thing, but like people love it, you know, which is kind of like, you know, again, here's like, you know, you were wrong, Dad. People like the weird stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I love the weird stuff. So
I appreciate that because, you know, people liking that really kind of makes me want to make more music like that. You know,
I'd love to hear more.
It really makes me want to kind of push those limits. 'Cause that song was really me kind of going somewhere else and pushing a song past where I thought it could go. And then hearing the feedback, I go, you know, I should really do more of that on the next record and just really push things even further next time, because that seems to be, I don't think I've been giving the audience enough credit.
Oh,
you know, okay. I don't think I've been giving the audience enough credit. And so I'm like, okay, if people want to go there, I can go there. Let's go there.
Let's do it. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm excited about pushing the limits on the next record even further. So
it kind of reminds me of one of my favorite artists. Like you said, like you grew up listening and were influenced by grunge era bands and all. And one of my favorite artists is from that era, Sean Smith. And
oh, okay.
I love Sean Smith, stuff he did with Satchel, Brad, Pigeonhead, you know, amazing stuff. And your music reminds me so much of him. And that song specifically just makes me think of him. And he was, I don't think I've ever told anybody this, but my wife, when I started this podcast and I was reaching out to a whole bunch of people, and I used to follow people on social media, Facebook particularly, because several years ago. And I would reach out to these guys whose music I loved, who weren't maybe really active, just to see if they were still putting out music. And luckily enough, a lot of them would accept the friend request. And Sean Smith was one of them. And so every once in a while, I'd send a little message that, hey, you know, like the new track, this is great. And some would respond, some wouldn't. And he was always pretty good about responding. And when I first started doing this podcast, I reached out to him and I said, hey, I'm starting this podcast and I would love to have you on. I love your music. I've loved everything you've done. First heard you in Brad, love Satchel, Pigeonhead, your solo stuff. I want to talk about all of it. And he got back to me and said, let me think about it. Okay. A couple of weeks go by and I said, hey, you ever think about it? And he says, okay, yeah. Let's go ahead and let's do it. I said, all right, we'll set up a date and figure out how to connect and get it done. So he sent me a demo track. This is all through like Facebook Messenger. So he sent me a demo track. And then literally, I think the next day he died.
Oh, wow.
We set up a date for like 2 weeks away and he passed away. I think it was, he sent me a instant message, had a song on it. And then couldn't have been more than 2 days after that that he passed away. And I was like, this show is cursed already. But
I was gonna say, I gotta go.
But so that's one reason why I think your music is connecting with me a lot, is because it reminds me of him. And I actually, you know, was able to talk with him a couple times and he was going to do this show and it, unfortunately it never happened.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. I'm not super familiar. You said, with Brad, he was, that the first record?
Well, all of them. He was in Brad with, Brad was Sean Smith, Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam.
Right. What was the first song in the first record called?
There was Nadine, but that wasn't the first song.
No, the first song, because the first album was called Shame, because the band was going to be called Shame.
Yes.
There was a band that owned the name Shame. And so the name of the singer of that band, Shame, was named Brad.
Yep.
Right? That's the story with
them? That's exactly right.
Yeah, and so they named their band Brad because of the guy who owned the name Shame.
Buttercup.
That's, I remember that. So yeah, it was a good song.
That whole first album is amazing. And so that's how I found out about Sean Smith. Apparently I had some other stuff. I had some old Mother Love Bone bootlegs and apparently he's playing piano on a bunch of them. And I just didn't know
that whole scene was way more incestuous than anybody ever remembers.
Yeah.
Like they all knew each other. They all hung out. They all played on each other's records.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
It was amazing. But
before anybody knew who any of those bands were, it's amazing. Never get that again. Never get that again.
No.
You know, have you read Our Band Could Be Your Life?
No, I've heard of it, but I have not read it.
Oh, you got to read that. That book is so inspirational. That book gives me a fighting chance, you know, because it's like being an independent artist and there's a lot of sentiment to the idea that you can do any kind of music you want.
Yeah.
And you can do things with it. You can affect people's feelings, you know. You can inspire somebody to do something. I mean, that's the whole point of this whole thing that we're trying to do. You know, at one point I thought I wanted to be rich and famous, and I thought I could do both, you know. Yeah. I'm going to be the biggest artist in the world, but I'm also not ever going to sell out, you know?
Right.
And so, and then I realized, what's the point? The whole point of being the biggest artist in the world is to sell out, but I needed it for my self-esteem or whatever, I guess, at the time.
Yeah.
I don't need that anymore. But the truth is, those bands never changed, and they never cared about the success.
Yeah.
They certainly wanted to do that with their lives as a lifestyle, much like I do, you know. I mean, I wake up every morning, I get to be Nick Vivid. I mean, how great is that?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's the whole point, isn't it? You know, but those bands really lived that. And then the success that they got by the end of the book, it was just such a fluke. You'll never see that kind of concentration, that untapped concentration anymore, because the internet's made everything so available to everybody.
Exactly.
At the time it was a secret. Nobody knew about Sub Pop in the Seattle scene.
And that, you know, that would happen occasionally. Like if you look at the Southern rock scene, like Macon, Georgia, you know, so many bands, but like you just hit the nail on the head. Then, you know, with the internet, that just, it can't happen again.
Yeah, I don't see how. I mean, it would be great. Like, even in New York, just as a scene in New York, I mean, the pandemic's, it's going to be interesting post-pandemic, because there's no scenes. Like, just nothing exists. There's no concentration of bands pushing each other and influencing each other. I mean, the best I'm doing right now is going on Twitch, looking to see what other artists are doing on Twitch or YouTube. Wow. And going, oh, what are they up to? What are they up to? I get it. Oh, okay, I got to outdo them, you know?
Yeah.
There's no like, we used to be in bands and we go to clubs and be like, oh, those guys are doing that, huh? Oh, we'll show them tonight, you know?
Yeah.
And that, I'm still very competitive like that, but it's tough to be competitive when there's nothing to compete with, you know? Yeah. And there's no outlet for that competition. There's no place for that to exist. It'll be interesting to see if people come out of the pandemic and there's all this crop of new bands. There will be a crop of new bands. They'll all have just learned their instruments, and it'll be enough for them just to get out on stage and play because they haven't done it before.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that there will be people who push themselves past the limits they thought they had and come out with something that's bigger than anybody expected. That would be kind of cool. I haven't seen it yet, but I'd really like to be influenced by something.
Well, you know, like you just mentioned with The Sky Is Falling, you know, you could be doing that too. You know, your next album.
Yeah, I mean, I could be. I mean, I think I have enough in me to push myself, to motivate myself to get there, but it would be really nice to be part of something that was bigger than me
right
now, you know? And I miss that. I miss not feeling like I'm part of a movement that's bigger than me at the moment. Cause there were times when I play in rock scenes, or even the last band I was in, you know, we were part of the Bushwick rock scene about, you know, almost 10 years ago. And that was pretty happening back then. And it was exciting. You know, you feel that energy, you know, it's like, oh, there's a movement happening. There's something. I love being part of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been part of it a couple of times. I'm not part of that right now. And it feels, but I think it has a lot to do with the pandemic, but I'd like to be part of something bigger than myself again. I just don't, maybe it's online or something. I don't know.
Well,
I guess we'll see.
How open are venues right now in New York? Cause I live in Virginia and things are open.
I mean, they're relatively open. I mean, bands are playing shows and stuff, but like even at my release party, it was probably half the amount of people who I was planning on showing up, you know, because people are buying tickets to shows and then half of them don't go, you know, the day of they get cold feet, you know, and just like, no, I'm not going to go. I'm scared. That fear in the air is just there. And I don't think you can escape that no matter how carefree the audience or the artist is. I mean, we just had a big pandemic problem. What was that band? They just did like, they had like a residency at Brooklyn Steel. Name escapes me for some LCD Sound System.
Oh, okay.
They were doing a huge residency, and then somebody in the audience got COVID. then the band got COVID and they ended up canceling it. And it was just a mess, you know, halfway through the residency, then they give half their audience COVID and they cancel it anyway. I don't want to be part of something like that. That just sounds too awkward and too unpleasant. And I mean, my release party, it was right at a time. It was in early November when the numbers were really low.
Yeah.
But I was even nervous leading up to it, going, I don't know if I should be doing this.
Wow.
And I don't know. It just isn't, it's not fun. And it's not, I don't want to put my audience through something like that where they're kind of on pins and needles to try to enjoy a rock show.
Yeah.
It's just an unpleasant experience. So
I'm sticking
to online stuff right now and, you know, posting, I'm starting on my Twitch channel again. I'm just going to do live from the studio stuff on my Twitch channel, and do recording and, you know, write music online and see how that goes over. I'm very particular with my internet image. So like, it took me a while to find a way to do TikTok videos that I liked. And it took me a while to figure out a way to like post things in a way that I thought represented my brand, quote unquote, right, Nick Vivid, and how I want to come across. And I think I finally, like I just did a thing for Spin Magazine for their Twitch channel in December. And I ended up playing acoustic guitar for it. And then I watched it back and I'm like, I don't like this at all. I'm not a singer songwriter. I shouldn't be sitting there with an acoustic guitar playing my songs. It's not natural for me. But then I did another thing with Twitch on my own channel where it was just me sitting at my studio here and writing. And then I just watched it back and I go, oh, now that looks kind of compelling. So, you know, it takes me a while to figure out a way to make these things work for me.
Okay.
But I think now that I've kind of got something I think works for me, I'm going to expand on that a little bit.
Well, that's awesome. So I've kept you for quite a while here. Where can people follow you? You've mentioned, you know, so many different avenues where people can listen to the music and follow you. And what's the best way for people to find your music and keep an eye on what you're doing?
I'm everywhere. NickVivid.com. Sign up for the mailing list. I don't spam people to death. I send out a mail like once every month or two. And then Instagram. I'm pretty active on Instagram, on TikTok, on Twitter a little bit. And then, and then my Twitch channel, I'm starting to get that going again. So I'd love people to sign up on my Twitch channel and check out, you know, because I'm probably going to be doing a lot of live streaming coming up. And then, and I'll be doing the vinyl for No More Secrets finally just came in. And I haven't officially released that yet. So I'm going to do a online vinyl release party at some point.
Oh,
plus,
cool.
I'm going to shoot some more music videos and just kind of do it like a second push on the record, because we pushed it leading up to the release party and I'm going to do another push this spring. So, and then we'll see what goes on from there.
What's the best way, vinyl or even the digital download? Is it Bandcamp is the best way or through the website?
Bandcamp's great. Website's good. I mean, you could, I got the Bandcamp, I got the Spotify, I got everything. So yeah, and anywhere you want to get the record. And I'm very hands-on with the digital distribution side of things. So I make sure the digital downloads are mastered the way I want them to be mastered. And everything's awesome. I get very picky about how it's represented out there, probably a little too much, but it's great because, you know, I've like a really good relationship with my distributor who handles all the digital stuff and we, you know, make sure everything's on the up and up. So wherever you get it, it's going to sound good. But yeah, Bandcamp's good. And obviously with Bandcamp, you support the artist directly.
Yeah.
And there's no middleman, but I like my distributor. So if he gets a cut, I'm fine with that.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, man, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. I really have enjoyed the album. It's just really a fun listen. And I went back and listened to the others and it's just, I've just made me feel good listening to it. I really loved it.
Awesome. Well, that's the whole point, you know, I mean, especially times like these, you know, I like to make people feel comfortable, connected, and also give them a sense of release at the same time. You know, I think, again, you know, when I was a little kid, music made me feel like I wasn't alone. And so I'm just trying to pass that on.
Well, man, I feel it and I love it and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And a pleasure.